everybody, and welcome back to the podcast. It's called Lead Singer Syndrome, and I am your host, Shane Told, and I take you into the backstage conversations that I have with other lead singers from all different walks of life, all different genres, all different ages and everything. Just, you know, anybody. If you sing into a microphone and, you know, on any kind of level, I would love to talk to you. And today, we got a great guest from an emerging band that is blowing the fuck up right now. They're called Beauty School Dropout. They did the Blink tour earlier this year. Mark Hoppus is backing them along with Pete Wentz on their new label, Verse Wire. And they have a new album that just came out, Ready to Eat. And this thing is awesome. Hard to describe. And we talk about that in this interview. It's a hard band to describe. Like, what is it exactly? It's kind of modern pop, but it's got some punk elements and a little bit of humor in there. And it's dancey, but it also has some like kind of ripping guitar tones. Yeah, it's awesome is all you need to know. And make sure you check out that album. And we're going to talk to the lead singer, Coley, in just a few minutes. But before we do jump into that, I want to remind you of a couple things, like I always do. You can get in touch with me. You can email me, leadsingersyndrome@gmail.com. I read all my email. And if you want to support the show, check out the Patreon. Be a member of the All Access Club for as little as $6 a month. That gets you in. That gets you perks. And that also keeps this thing going every week for free. Because without the generosity of the All Access Club members, wouldn't be able to do it. Would not be able to do it. So yes, check it out. leadsingersyndrome.com/all access. And yeah, if you like the show, tell a friend, tell a loved one. Let's keep this thing going, spreading, you know, post about it on social media. If you've got a social media account, you know, I don't know, do it. If you got a TikTok, do it on TikTok because I don't have a TikTok and apparently that's important. So yeah, I don't know. Whatever you could do to help me out, I do appreciate it. And don't worry, I will be doing these podcasts for a long time to come. In fact, what is it now? 2023, 8 years, baby. 8 years last month, I think I've been doing this podcast. So I'm not stopping anytime soon at all. But thank you so much for being here, for listening, and I appreciate any support that you can give me. Also, my band Silverstein, we're going on tour. In fact, I think when you listen to this, we're already on tour. So pick up a ticket. It's a really exciting tour. It's the 10th anniversary of our album, This Side of the Wind Shifts. We're playing the whole thing and doing all our other bangers as well. And we've got great support with Stray from the Path and Avoid. And yeah, it's major markets. So if you're near a major market or you can fly to one, check it out. SilversteinMusic.com for all your ticketing needs. Anyway, I'm ready. Are you ready? Ready to eat, maybe? I don't know. Here it is. My conversation with Coley of Beauty School Dropout. I'm here with Coley from Beauty School Dropout. Dude, thanks for taking the time, man.
Yes, sir. Thanks for having me.
Of course. I'm so fucking busy. I don't even know. You're somewhere between Nashville and Chicago right now. Looking at your tour dates, I'm a little lost. Where are you guys at right now?
Currently in Nashville. In fact, we just got out of a meeting with our merchandise company, and we're about to catch a show in a little bit here for Bardo's Sister, and then we're off to Chicago.
All right, cool. So busy, busy, man. Taking meetings on days off and everything else.
Yes, sir.
This is a headline tour you're doing in support of your brand new album. It just came out like not even a month ago. Ready to Eat.
Yes, sir.
Out now. How's everything been, man? How are you feeling?
I feel really good. It's been amazing. It's been kind of interesting just trying to like feel everything all at once, just because, like you said, we're touring an album that released, I think, literally the day that we left for tour. And just doing the balancing act of like playing shows, running press, doing all the stuff in between, on top of like, we don't even have a proper TM for this tour. So like, we brought our dads out each week. We have one of our rock dads coming on to spot us. So like, we're kind of just like really just running and gunning everything right now, but it's been awesome and it's really cool. Morale is high.
That's amazing. No, well, congrats on the record. The record's awesome. It's like nine tracks, but it's like eight singles and an outro. It's a, you know, it's like, it's really, really solid. It's like an action packed record. And what jumped out at me right away, cause you know, like these days, you know, as a musician myself, like I always go on Spotify and I'm always like, I want to look at the song credits. I want to see like who's working on this stuff, you know?
Yeah.
And I noticed with you guys, it seemed like every song was like a different producer. And I looked it up and apparently you worked with six different producers on this record.
Yeah.
Of nine tracks. So that's kind of interesting. Like, what is that like going into a record or going into a session and kind of having like every single time be a little bit different? Do you like that? Is that a challenge at all?
I don't mind it. You know, it's interesting. So like, ultimately, I think the reason for that is like, we kind of produce everything. So all the producers that we're bringing in are generally like, we're reflecting ideas off of, and we'll get the demo done with them, but then we finish it.
Right.
I think the only song on the record that another producer really handled most of the heavy lifting on was Beautiful Waste with Andrew Goldstein.
Yeah.
Me and Bardo went in with him that day, and like, we honestly didn't expect it to be a full day session. And it was just one of those moments where the energy was so hot and the chemistry was there. And he was like, Goldstein was on a roll. And if Goldstein is not kicking you out of his house, it's like, okay, cool. We're going to stay and get this one finished. So, yeah, it's kind of interesting to be honest. We all kind of have our feet in the publishing world as well. Like, a lot of our initial success was kind of finessing these like A&R sessions from different publishers, where we would end up going out and like, you know, they would put us in the room with a new artist and then we would kill the session. And then all of a sudden that artist team was looking at us, but we would never sign the deal. So I think just because we're so proactive with writing, we've gotten used to the nature of like speed dating sessions and kind of just like trying different sonics with new people. And oftentimes we try to bring in producers or writers who aren't even really in the rock space, just because we know rock so well. And we always want to ride the line of like, you know, trying to innovate in the rock world and make it a little bit more pop and mainstream friendly. So that's kind of our process.
Totally. I mean, you've got two of the biggest names in rock, you know, pop punk right behind you.
Yeah.
Mark Hoppus and Pete Wentz have invested, have signed off on you, and you know, you're signed to their label Verse Wire. And you know, that's
absolutely,
that's cool, because like, I guess it's really, what word am I looking for? It must feel really good for you to have that backing and feel like someone believes in you so much.
Yeah.
But also there must be a certain pressure too that comes with that, right? I mean, that's like, these aren't just nobodies. These aren't just like big guys. These are like the biggest guys.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. Like, pressure is pretty self-inflicted. Like, no part of me, at least speaking for myself, never really felt like any additional pressure because of who we're responding to or who we're working with. I think for me, it's this like constant feeling of you know, it's like a backhanded thing, but chasing the next thing and just like continuously pushing myself and our band to level up and grow.
Yeah.
And I think that's where most of the pressure comes from, is like, whether we're signed to these people or not, we're consistently trying to reach the next tier. But that all being said, obviously having them in our core is like the biggest honor you could possibly imagine. We're so grateful, and like, they're super cool about hearing the music and being very honest and transparent about, you know, their thoughts and their opinions, and also very much so good at being like, you know what, this is what I think, but like, you guys are ultimately the artist and we support you, which is really, really cool. Cause I feel like that's a very rare occasion in the music industry, whether it's from the people that we're co-signed by or not.
Totally. Well, I mean, when you're talking about Mark and Pete, they both come from, you know, underground punk scenes. You know what I mean? I mean,
yeah,
it's, and sure, it's been a while, right? I mean, since they were in that position,
sure.
But at the same time, they understand it, right? And they understand exactly what you're trying to do. But, you know,
yeah,
I feel like it must be a challenge in some ways too, just because musically, there's no like real roadmap for what you're doing, you know? Like,
yeah.
I always felt like with, you know, Blink, or, you know, Blink was kind of like, you know, they sounded like, to me, like when I first heard them, it was like, okay, this is kind of like the Descendants or No Effects or whatever. And then Fall Out Boy came out and I was like, yeah, this is kind of like what Newfound Glory did, but a little different. But I hear you guys and it's like, there is no artist that jumps into my mind that's like, oh, this band kind of sounds like this. Not at all,
thank,
you know, because you
thank
guys,
God.
No, I mean, well, that's not easy to do. I mean, it's almost, it's very rare. And in some ways I think it's a blessing and a curse, right? Because
yeah,
it's a blessing in that people can be like, this is original. They're mixing, you know, like modern pop elements with like classic guitar tones and classic synths and other organic sounds. But then also it's like, well, what do they sound like? Like who can I compare them with? And it's like, I don't know, like you just got to listen to the band. So that must be kind of a challenge too. Cause like when someone asks you, when you're in like a fucking Uber or something, like, oh, what's your band sound like? What do you say?
Yeah. You know, it's funny, even to this day, we have always kind of struggled to define the sonics of this genre. We call it renegade pop.
I like that.
That's kind of like our easiest coin term to make people understand it. But I don't know. We always say like, if Skrillex had produced Nirvana and the Chili Peppers or something in that realm, just because, like you said, it is kind of something that we struggle to define, really.
Yeah. No, like, I mean, I like renegade pop. That's cool. I mean, I don't really hear those other, you know, influences. Like, I guess I kind of do, but
yeah,
but it's tough, man. And I also wonder, like, you know, with you guys, obviously you're very well versed in like writing, in how making a song works and how you put things together, and you've got producers in your band and all this stuff.
For sure.
But I feel like it must be a challenge when you're like, okay, we're at this point in a song or in a, like producing a song. It's like, what do we do next?
Yeah.
There's almost too many tools at your disposal. There's like no rules. It's like, we could go in the box in the computer and do something. We could plug in a guitar and a fuzz pedal. Are we programming drums? Are we playing drums? Like those decisions must be tough sometimes. It must not always be so obvious.
Yeah. It kind of depends on the song. Like, sometimes, for instance, Beautiful Waste, it's like we pretty much finished that whole thing in a day, and it was just like, sometimes it just happens like that.
Yeah,
I think oftentimes our biggest struggle as a group is the last 20% of a song. Like, we do really, really well at just like the day of session. We're like, get the archetype blueprint done. And then it's usually the final touches where we're like, okay, do we want, kind of like you said, to like these drums to feel programmed or more live, or what elements do we want to harness to like really polish the song off? I think that's where we're kind of like, what do we do?
Right.
Just because we're also like very OCD. Literally, I think we all as individuals have OCD. And so there's this funny thing where sometimes like one person will be in a fixation episode and we're all just like wavering through what the options are. So, we, you know, I mean, it just takes flushing out all the ideas. I have to say credit to Jason Butler from Fever 333, because early on,
yeah,
when we did the Boys Do Cry EP, he came on after we had written almost all those songs and like executive produced,
yeah,
helping them get to that last 100%. And like, he really demonstrated the most clean cut way of being able to, or getting us to think like, okay, like song is king, let's rinse every idea right now. And like, we don't even have to worry. Cause I think once you get the good idea, we have the ear to identify that. It's more so the getting there part. So he did a really good job of leading us in out of the dark and being like, yo, like, it's okay. Don't overthink it. Just try everything. And we're like, okay.
Right.
And through that, we kind of found ourselves being better at like, okay, this is like what the song needs. This is right. But, you know, I feel also, you know, we're, like you said, we have Mark and Pete and this council of people who we know that we can rely on for honest answers and very credible answers. And so oftentimes if we run into a wall, we can send it to them, and there's like great people that we can kind of reflect ideas off of, which is we're very grateful for.
Totally. Totally. And yeah, Jason's an old friend of mine too. You know, met him back in the Let Live days.
Same, yeah.
And you know, it's just like, you know, in just a few short years of, you know, your band starting out and everything, like working with Jason,
yeah.
Rob Cavallo, big deal. Like he was in the room for some of those songs from what I understand.
Yeah.
You know, this is the guy that produced, you know, Green Day, Dookie, you know, so it's like a big deal, but like, I guess as a young band to be immersed with these people that have just done either massive stuff or in Jason's case, extremely highly critically acclaimed stuff as well.
Totally.
That's just a great, amazing influence to just have. And I guess my question is, how did that even happen? Like, how did you meet Jason? Like, how does one do that? That's like pretty crazy.
It's always, you know, it's a mix of things. We have a lot of dumb luck. Like, I think it's a lot of right time, right place. I think we're also very human and like have ended up in the same room as a lot of these people, and just, you know, it doesn't take much to strike up a conversation. Like, we're like as admirable as these people are, we treat everybody the way that we want to be treated, and I think through that find ourselves in these situations where people oftentimes like kind of gravitate towards us, just like on a friendly level, and we really believe that friends work with friends. The Jason one was pretty funny. So like growing up for me, like Let Live was like my Bieber in high school.
What a band.
Or I guess Jason in particular was like my Bieber. Like literally I have my like Hollywood and She Did tattooed on my arm, and like I got OG lyrics kind of tatted all over my body. And I met Jay outside of Soma San Diego. They played the side stage room and I saw them. I think I was like 15 or 16 and went outside, talked to him for like 20 minutes. He was not only like one of the coolest and most down to earth, humble people I've ever met, but also we must have talked for a span of 20 minutes and hadn't seen him for a year. A whole year went by and they played in San Diego again. I think the next show was, I saw them in like Chain Reaction a year later, and he remembered my name.
Yeah.
Like we hadn't contacted each other. We hadn't nothing. Like he just fully remembered my name off of that 20 minute interaction. And that to me was like altered my brain chemistry forever. Cause I was like, wow, this is who I want to be as an artist someday.
Right.
Although I struggle terribly with names. but aside from that, I was just like, wow, like this dude is so cool. And he ended up giving me, I brought my dad to a show of theirs at Shea Cafe. And I remember that was the show that he like gave me his number and was just like, oh bro, you skate? Like, let's go skate sometime. Like whatever. And really just treated me like a human, kind of like I was saying earlier.
Yeah.
To other people. And so, you know, through that we stayed connected. He was always super, I don't know if it's that he saw potential in me or was just like that cool of a person or what, but you know,
probably a little bit
decade later, I just,
yeah,
I'm sure a mix of both, but I just was always so supportive of him, and he kind of had that mutual love back. And so when time came and we were throwing like our first things, you know, I always kept him in the loop, and like it took a few times to be like, yo, like we should get a session in, for him to be like, okay, let me make the time. But he did. And when we finally did, he was like, oh shit, this is cool. And so that was kind of how it came to be.
Awesome. Awesome. No, he's one of the best. And yes, Let Live, one of the greatest live bands ever, period.
Truly. Truly.
Awesome. Awesome. That's a great story. And okay, well then I got to continue asking you, like Rob Cavallo, that's not a guy you just meet at a show at the side stage at, Soma, you know, I mean, how does that happen?
Yeah. Also super random. Like one of the first, so during COVID, we couldn't perform anywhere. And so we were trying to like build our digital footprint. And one of the things that we were thinking of was like doing kind of like a live stream showcase with Cisco Adler, if you're familiar with him.
No, I'm not.
He's a good buddy of ours.
Okay.
Cisco is, do you remember Cisco and Shwayze? Like, you could be my Corona in line.
Oh, I do. Yes, I do. Okay.
Yeah. He had a big smash much way back. Also, he's like from the Adler family. His dad is Lou Adler, who is basically like the godfather of the Sunset Strip. But pretty much held me down with him. He invited us to do a live showcase, live stream showcase at their place at the time. They had a house in Malibu called The Cocoon. And it was this like artist compound where they had studios, a stage, a pool, all this stuff. And it was kind of like a artist content house, if you will. And so we went and just happened to be there, right time, right place. And while we were doing our live stream thing, Rob was in a session with our friend Romy, if you're familiar with Death by Romy.
Mm-hmm, yep.
And he actually manages her, I believe, still. But that was pretty much the start. Was like, we knew Romy already, so that was kind of like foot in the door. We're just like, oh, what's up? Like, yo, crazy, so good to see you. And then Cisco's like, yo, that's Rob Cavallo. Like, he produced everybody. And we're like, oh shit. And the other two boys in the band are like major Green Day fans, like huge Green Day fans. I can't stress that enough. So when I told them that, they're like, oh my god, what? And so we kind of just like started the conversation, hung me down with him, and same thing. He's pretty cool because, like, I think much like most pioneers in the music space, he keeps his ear to the ground and is constantly looking for what's hot and what's new. And like, he's still to this day very actively working on like very major records. And so,
yeah,
I think again, just the energy and timing, and obviously us having been friends with his artist, kind of helped. And so through that, we just ended up at a session at his house. And the first one that we did, I think, was actually a song for Romy, which we did this song called Day I Die. It's out. I just actually performed with her at Aftershock. But then we ended up doing Slipping Away, which is on the Boys Do Cry EP.
Yeah.
Through that, again, same thing. It was like, he was just like, wow, you guys have sauce. And so he started inviting us back to work on stuff for other artists. And like, we just became good friends and started to work on a whole bunch of music together.
Incredible. Incredible. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, you know, he produced, you know, the Black Parade. No big deal. No big deal. wow.
Yeah. You want to know something funny about that song that he told us?
Yeah, I do.
So the intro for that song wasn't even a part of the song. They had the whole rest of the song, and that whole like intro ballad moment essentially was, oh God, don't quote me on this because I think I'm remembering it correctly. But from what I remember, it was written as a pitch for like some like a hot air balloon company or some random sync pitch. Like, it was totally irrelevant.
Okay.
And like, they had been in the studio for a long time, and I think they took like 2 weeks off, or he went somewhere for like 2 weeks. And when they came back, because I guess they'd been stumped on the intro of that song, they were like, wait, try this. And they brought it to him. We're like, yo, look what we did. And he's like, oh my God, what? Crazy, incredible. And so like, that's, it's the happy accidents, you know?
It totally is. And those stories are what make podcasts like this go around, dude. It's like, yeah, that is super fucking cool. Oh man, dude. Oh, I feel like we could talk all day. There's so much to talk about, man.
Oh,
but I definitely want to touch on a couple things on this record. And I think the most recent thing you've done to promote the album is your video for Blow My High, which right away, I love what you did because it's something so rare where you do a music video, but it's actually a live recording. Like, you mic'd up and you're playing. It's not, it's not just lip syncing to, you know, like an album track. And what I thought was so cool about it is not only just that nobody does that, but also it kind of brings you guys into a different sort of space. Like, it came out feeling a lot more like a kind of like a straight up punk rock song, like energy, than more of your pop elements on your recording. So
for sure,
what was the decision to do that? Because that's like definitely not something you see every day.
You know, it's funny, like, it wasn't even really a decision. I think the whole thing of it being a live video was just an opportunity that Vivo gave us. They're like, yo, let's do two songs and we'll drop it together. So we were like, yes, of course. And that whole segment that they do is usually live.
Okay.
And I think that just happens to be the best representation of how we perform live, because our whole thing really is like, we try and make the records as radio ready as possible. But then when you come to the shows, we play it like, it is a punk show. in essence.
Yeah.
We get pretty rowdy. So I think that was just the first time that we did a real like visual representation of that, that mixed with the audio too.
Yeah.
But it's cool to hear that, because going into this next album, I know we just dropped our new one, but going into this next one, we're already thinking about what we want to do differently. And I think a big thing for me is like, I definitely want to lean into the live aspects a bit more and just like showcasing that we have that ability.
It's true, right? Because you can work on sessions, you can work with producers in LA and do all this stuff, but it's like, until you play a song live, it just, you don't really know what the energy is going to be like, you know?
Yeah.
And you learn a lot. You learn a lot from playing a song live and being like, oh shit, this is the one that's like kind of popping off in a different way.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Touring has really given us a new perspective on our writing too, just because there's so many, like as far as dynamics go, we try and keep the room as on their feet as possible. And obviously, kind of through trial and error, as you know, you see what works and what doesn't and what people respond well to. So now going into the studio, like our first project, we had never really played shows yet. And we made that whole thing. So we didn't really even have any of that in mind. Whereas moving forward on these last two albums, we've really been heavily considering like, okay, live, like what is like a good time or a good moment that we could like teach this hook or do this, like, you know, for instance, with Blow My High, like, we started playing that one on the Blink tour before it was even out.
Right.
And we realized that bridge was such an opportunity to like do this. Now every night we get people down to the floor for the like, right, the, I want it, I need it. And then everybody jumps and explodes right when it hits. So it's like taking into consideration moments like that and letting it really like deliver itself into the music is so crucial for us now.
100%. Yeah. And you brought it up. So let's talk about that. Getting the opportunity to tour with Blink earlier this year, also Lollapalooza, and you opened for Matchbox 20 and all this stuff. Like this is cool. I mean, what is it like? I mean, let's just talk about the Blink tour.
Yeah.
What's it like to be opening a show like that? I think it was Turnstile was also on that one too.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just what an opportunity, but it also must be kind of weird when you're just like, you're opening it up. A lot of people are just like kind of coming in the show.
For sure.
They don't know who you are. Like it's a kind of a hard one. You know, it's bright, right? You're like probably if you're playing in sheds, right? So it's like outside, it's still daylight. You know, that's tough, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it was the most unique experience of the year. I will say that, especially just having gone, because like our first tour ever was our headline tour, but it was like 200 caps this time last year. So to paint a picture, it's like we did that and then start of the year went into like 1500 to 2500 caps opening for Jaden, and then followed that up with 25,000 caps with Blink, right? All in the span of
it's like
6 to 8 right? months. Yeah.
10 times straight and then up. 10 times again.
Totally. And it's wild because what like no one really tells you is there's like all these venues have different bureaucracies. So there's like such a weird, you know, scaling into that space was very different for us, just because it's like there's red tape regulations about like you can't even load your own gear to the stage, or like,
oh right,
you know, just weird things like that was very unique. But then I think also being in the rooms like that big was such a interesting perspective for us, because like, you know, oddly enough, it felt very comfortable, the actual like shows and being able to play on stages like that. I think we all feel like that's where we want to be, so it kind of like felt like home for us. But the harder part of that is being so obviously, like you said, as a first of three, it's like the room's kind of trickling in, it's dark, you can't see as much, you're like the whole job at hand is kind of persuading all these older Blink heads like why we're the shit now,
right?
And so it's just a far less visceral experience than some like the club shows, at least at this point in our career, because no one really knew us. So that was interesting. But aside from that, it was so, so cool. I mean, Turnstile and Blink are quite literally our two favorite bands ever. And so now it's kind of this funny thing where it's like, well, what next? Like, fuck, that's probably the coolest thing we've ever experienced. What do you do from there?
I know, right? And that's true, right? Wow. Well, congrats on that, all that, man. That's That is super cool. And now, you know, now you're headlining again. You know, what's the crowd like coming to your shows? I mean, how are people discovering you? Are they people that saw you with Blink and are coming out? Are they people just that, you know, stumbled upon you, like on the internet somehow? Like, do you even know? Like, it's, you know, watching this thing grow when you're on the inside, you know, looking out.
Yeah.
What's your interpretation of this, and how's the reaction been?
It has been interesting to see. So as far as the shows go, obviously the internet's kind of this weird, like, invisible veil where you can't necessarily quantify everything that's going on. But
no,
everyone who's been coming to these shows, I'd say 75 to 80% of the tickets we've sold so far have been Jaden fans. Like, that fan base converted so hard to us. And I think also, having gone into it, you know, he's like a kind of a celebrity in his own right, and blew up on TikTok, and then Travis signed him, whatever. So his narrative was super, super tangible, I think, for a lot of kids that age. And so now, having gone into that world, like, we were already working on music together, and he was posting about us. So when we got on the road, people were just like so exhilarated with the narrative. And through that, I think we garnered most of the fan base that we are looking at now. And it's funny to see you. I mean, you would think after having played such massive rooms and going on tour with Blink that a lot more of the crowd would have come from that. But the conversion's been interesting. Like,
yeah,
I'm sure it got us listeners, but a lot of those people, it's like they're dropping their kids off to come to that show, but their kids are the ones who would like come to our show. So yeah. it's pretty wild. Like, to be honest, most of the fan base that has been coming out has been from Jaden. There's been a good handful every night from the Blink run, and then I'd say the last like bit has just been through TikTok or press or, you know, the internet, just doing the internet things. Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. Well, that's awesome.
They're crazy, though. It is a movement, though. I will say that. The fans, the dropouts, oh my God. We got a crazy-ass fan base.
Hell yeah, dude.
Very, very, very spiritual experience. You got to come out to one of our shows, for sure.
Oh, I'll be there. I'll be there. Absolutely, man. That's great. And, you know, you mentioned press, and, you know, radio and stuff is all a part of like your band and trying to grow this thing.
Yeah.
But you're doing something really cool, and very punk rock, in that you're giving back to the community with actually donating meals to local food banks for, you know, for each, you know, each thing you do. So I guess we're feeding some people doing this, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. I just, you know, if we all are on the same page that we want to give back as much as possible, and charity has been a really cool through line for us, because I think we all get annoyed when we see artists or people who take a stand on a topic, but then like don't put their money where their mouth is at all. And we've had moments where we've even, I think, found ourselves almost being guilty of that. And they were like, what are we doing? Like, fuck this. Let's actually just raise money, or like, create the space for that whatever group that's being donated to actually flourish and thrive. So I mean, the theme of this album being Ready to Eat, we thought it'd be kind of kitschy to put food in people's mouths. I think that's important.
Yes. And I did find out the origin behind Ready to Eat, because I was like, the first I saw it, I was like, oh no, it's not about like eating pussy or something, I hope. God. that's the first thing, bro. I saw. I was like, oh no,
dude,
this is not like,
no.
But I read the story about Pret-a-Manger in the UK, and you guys got obsessed with this place.
Insane. Wow. Yeah, that is so funny. When we go to the UK, we've been twice now, and us just being broke little road warriors, we're like, what's the cheapest option for food and coffee? Right. Always. And so they're like, for those of you who don't know, Pret-a-Manger, they allow, it's like Starbucks in the UK and Europe, but for $30 a month, you get a subscription where you can get up to 5 coffees a day. Like, as long as they're over 30 minutes apart from the last transaction. So us being us, we're like, oh, fuck yeah. Are you kidding me? We're just getting zooted off coffee beans. And so That was kind of like how that started. And then we were like mid tour, and all of a sudden the label was like, yo, we need to put a deadline on this. We need to start getting assets out. Like, what is the name of the album? And we had run through a few options, but we were just like, none of this really fits a narrative or the narrative of the album and like where we're at. Like, what is this? And I think it was literally like midnight, the very last night of tour before we were flying back to the States. We had a photo shoot and we're all sitting getting our makeup done. And like, I think I like looked up, and we were all joking about it. And I looked at the cup. I was like, what if we called it Prêt à Manger? And they're like, oh my God, that'd be so funny. And then I was like, wait, what is that transcribed to? And so I Googled it and it's literally ready to eat. We're like, oh my God. We all looked at each other and we're just like, that's it. That's the album name. We did it. And like, it was so funny because everyone who was on this, like the production team was just like, did you literally just think of that? Like, did we just watch you come up with the album name over something? And we're just like, fuck yeah, dude, that's awesome. So it just, it worked. And then after the fact, I think we found a lot of meaning to give to it just with, you know, us wanting to, we've put in a lot of work really to get to where we are. And I think we're at a point now where we're just like, okay, like all the stuff we've talked about, we've spent this year touring with Blink, writing records with all our heroes, doing all this stuff. It's like, they're pretty big shoes to fill. And I think it's really just our way of saying like, we're ready to fill those shoes.
Yeah, no, I love it. It's got inside meaning and outside meaning. It's perfect. And yes,
yeah. It's not about, but I'm going to start telling,
it's nothing sexual. Just for people know, it's not sex, nothing sexual. It's very, very,
I'm
going to
start telling
name.
People that. I'm like, yeah, it's about eating pussy. Actually,
I was so. Like, is this like, it's like a Steel Panther album title. I think they have one called All You Can Eat actually, which is not about Prêt à Manger. Definitely not.
Yeah, we should have just taken like a really tight frame photo of our crotches with studded belts and just thrown it up as the album cover.
There you go. Insane. I love it. How do they do it though? 30 pounds a month could get you like 150 coffees. How do they do it?
Yes. I don't know. I mean, it's coffee ultimately. I mean, I don't think it's that expensive. I don't
know,
but it's a good question. I have no idea, honestly, but
I guess it
works.
Yeah. Well, I guess like it's because it's just coffee, right? You don't get any food or anything for that, right? Maybe you get a discount.
Yeah.
Is that how it works? I don't know.
I think you get a discount on food too, but I'm sure there's a lot of people I've noticed with a lot of like subscription models. I think they probably bank on a lot of people who either just like do it because it seems like a good deal and then don't actually use it that much or end up like forgetting to unsubscribe. So they're just like rinsing charges left and right. But
or you figure you're going there for a coffee that's going to cost you like, even if you were there every day, it's still a pound, right?
Yeah.
And then you're going to buy some other shit, right? You're going to go in, you're going to get a fucking whatever.
Totally. Oh yeah. Every time I would like to get a little... Dead ass. I would get a croissant with a ginger shot every time without fail on top of the free drink. So it's like, yeah, that's probably how they get you.
There you go. Love it.
Oh, funny.
Awesome, dude.
They actually, you know what? they actually found out about the album title. Like, we didn't even reach out to them. I guess someone on their intel found out about it and they reached out to us and ended up catering our New York show and giving us free memberships for the rest of this tour. So shout out Prêt.
Yeah, they're all over New York. That's right.
Yeah.
That's so funny, man. Well, there you go, man. That's
it was wild.
That's a beautiful thing. So you got Chicago coming up. That's a big market.
Yeah, right.
That's exciting. I assume
you've
probably played most of the cities you've been to before. You've been to some of them, but there's probably some new ones. Are you excited for any specific shows on this tour?
I am looking forward to, you know, I think everywhere that we have left is somewhere that we've played, except for San Francisco. We haven't played San Francisco, so that will be really cool. I'm looking forward to that. I was originally trying to move to San Fran before I chose LA, so that will be cool. But
yeah,
everything else is a repeat. I'd say my big one that I'm looking forward to is either Chicago or Denver, because I have a lot of family out there. And then also like hometown shows, San Diego and LA. Those are going to be just fucking ridiculous.
Hell yeah, man. Hell yeah, man. I love it.
Yeah.
Sweet.
Where are you based?
I'm in Las Vegas.
Well, 702.
But that's right. But I'm originally from Toronto, Canada.
Okay, word. Right on. Also love Toronto. Well, Yeah. Sick. If we end up playing a show near Vegas anytime soon, you should definitely come through. Absolutely. Or even if you're in LA anytime, like, yeah, please hit us up. Let's connect.
I'm there all the time, man. Absolutely, dude.
I love that.
So, dude, well, Coley, thank you so much, man, for doing this and talking to me. What else to tell the people before I let you go and get back to your day off?
Stay tuned. Check us out. We got a lot of music, a lot of collabs, and a lot of touring ahead of us. And we don't intend on leaving anytime soon. So whether you like it or not, you're going to be seeing us.
That's right. Beauty School Dropout, here to stay, backed by some huge names for a good fucking reason, man. So, dude, thanks a lot for doing this. I always play music on the podcast. Would love to play maybe one of your favorite songs from your latest record. What are you thinking?
Ooh, Scarlet Letter or One Night Stand You.
Oh, dude, that's my favorite too. I love Scarlet Letter, is a banger.
Thank you. Yeah, that one's definitely been a crowd favorite. It's been really cool.
Awesome. Coley, man, thank you so much for doing this, and I'll see you around. Best of luck.
Ah, dude. Yeah, thanks for having us. We appreciate you, or me.
Yeah, of course, man.
Yeah. Much love, brother. Talk to you soon.
What a waste of a memory. I guess I'm not good enough. Stay together for the sake of the family. But that's no fun, baby, that's no. Last night my eyes saw enough to write a scarlet letter. I don't think we're bad in love. Does he treat you better? She told him, hey, 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 hey. Meet me in the alleyway.
So there is an absolute banger of a track, Scarlet Letter from Beauty School Dropout. I want to thank Coley and the whole team at VerseWire for having him on the show. Go see the band live. They're touring all over for the next little while. And yeah, they kick ass. And check out the new record, Ready to Eat. You heard the story. And listen to the record. Very, very, very cool stuff. Next week, I will be back again with another episode, and I'll be doing it from the road this time. So that's right. Silverstein, we're back on tour all over the US and Canada playing our album, This Is How the Wind Shifts, for its 10-year anniversary and all the other hits too. So yeah, make sure you go check me out, man. Get some tickets, silversteinmusic.com, and we'll see you all there. But yeah, thanks a lot. Please keep this thing going and growing. Tell a friend, tell a loved one, post about it on social media, write a review on iTunes, whatever you got to do. It all helps. Thank you so, so much. Until next week, peace and love.